Technorama episode 625, Spiders in Disguise. Hello and welcome to Technorama, the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you, welcome, and if you are returning, welcome back. My name is Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and with me as always is, of course, Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I'm doing good. I'm having a good time over here. I'm trying to stay warm. I think I'm catching what my dad's got.
Uh-oh.
As he got older, he just was always cold. Now I...
Well, it is winter, you know, and you know, if you're always cold, you can always come out here to Phoenix.
Yeah, that's true. No, I don't know. He's always been super cold. I mean, like, you touch him if his hands are cold all the time. Now I feel like I'm catching that.
Ask Kim if she's getting warm, because what I found is Donna seems to be warm a lot, so she turns the thermostat down, so it makes me feel cold. So it's not your body changing; it's their body and the thermostat changing.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah.
I see. Just saying, check it out.
It see
might not be an old
it.
Man thing.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's what it is. I'm going to put one of those little protective covers over the thermostat.
Well, you could always get the digital thermostat and lock your wife out.
I do have that.
Password time.
Yeah. When she leaves the house, I can always sit. I can sit right here and I can change both thermostats. And
sounds without, plausible to
when
me.
She comes home, I'm like, oh, she's in the driveway, you know, change it back.
All right, let me pull up, we have some voicemail, so while I'm pulling that up, let's play the intro.
Letters, oh, we get letters, we get your letters every day.
All right, we got a voicemail from Dan D-Man Coyer, Patreon member extraordinaire. Did you have a chance to read the transcript in Google?
Google yes, I think I remember seeing that.
I read it and went, what? He's complaining about something?
Oh, no. Yeah. It did. It kind of changed his point of view.
Hold on. I'll go ahead. Continue.
I was just saying Google decided to change his point of view.
That's what it sounded like.
His attitude in the email.
Sounded like to me. Let me bring that back up in another window, because that one was a little quiet, and I just realized you and he are on the same interface, so that wouldn't work. There it is. Dandy man, we'll pull that over here and go.
First of all, I won't apologize. I wasn't meaning to complain when I asked for a calendar. It says whether you're playing or not, or you live casting your show. It was just a quick wit on my part that wasn't as funny, apparently. Anyhow,
I
was listening to the Verity show, and you were talking about the Google Chromecast with Google TV, and I got one of those right away just to test it out, and I really like it because it brings up all the shows from all available platforms that you subscribe to, plus Google, of course, and it gives you different ways to watch, so you don't have to go to each one to see what show is available when you're choosing if you have multiple platforms, such as it'll list, and it works better with things like HBO Max and Netflix and Disney Plus. It does not work so well with Prime Plus. I mean, it does work with it, but because it's a competitor, it doesn't always show them in the, like, continued watching. Or if you click on Expanse, it jumps to the most recent episode instead of the episode you left off on. Whereas in Netflix, it does exactly how you would want it to work. It jumps right in where you last left off. For any series, or if you find a show, you think of a show that you want to watch, you can see that it's on Tubi. It'll bring that app up if you have that app, and so on. I thought it was really good. I have Roku too. I like them also. But the Google TV as one step up with having all the shows available on one screen, I think, personally. Thanks. Thanks for a great show, guys. Talk to you there. Don't bother making a calendar. I was just joking.
Oh, no, it's on the task list. No, I made a joke that went a little flat. But I am going to take that because I think we do need to let people know when we are, or, you know, if we have a have an implied schedule, we need to let people know when we're not going to do it.
Could we do that on Facebook, perhaps? Maybe put the calendar there. Or do you want to, we have a Technorama Google calendar that is shared.
Well, you know, maybe both.
And I think it's even exposed into our website. So it has all the on the day in history things, but let's look at some options. We'll do that. It's a solvable problem.
And I do want to say something about the Roku real quick. Yeah. I did an experiment this week. I have another place and it has satellite internet. And it's not the fastest internet, of course, but I tried streaming some stuff with the Chromecast and I tried streaming with a Roku. And this is not the Chromecast he was talking about with the Google TV. But when I tried to do that using my phone, I noticed I was getting a lot of buffering issues starting out on the whatever movie or whatever it was I was trying to watch. And I don't know enough about how the back end part of how Google or what, you know, the Chromecast works to understand exactly what the problem was. But when I did when I used the Roku, it buffered with no problem and it played and without any issue. Netflix was actually really good on the Roku. Some of the other apps, you can tell that Netflix and like YouTube have a lot of experience with the streaming as opposed to some platforms, because Netflix will show you, hey, we're buffering. Okay, now we're playing. So you understand exactly what's going on. Some of them you see it's grainy, and some other apps it's grainy, and then it starts clearing up and it works just fine. But bottom line is, I had a lot less issue with the Roku as I did with Chromecast. So, I love the Chromecast at my house with fast internet. It works perfect.
Sure.
So there's something they're doing a little different. I guess they anticipate you having really high-end internet to stream. So, yeah, the Roku worked really good.
What is your up and down speeds on the satellite? Just out of curiosity, have you tested it?
Speed test? I'm trying to remember now. It's like 3 up.
Okay.
And 25 down, 20, 25. It's not much.
That's not bad, though.
It's not terrible, but it's the latency. Okay. You know, that's the problem.
Okay.
And I'll tell you something else I noticed was if you try to stream live TV, you know, live TV, they're trying to keep inside the time blocks, you know? So when you stream something, I think the buffering range that you could actually buffer is kind of tight, you know? So when you're watching it, it ends on the hour as a TV show would and starts with the next show. But I think that buffering's tight, and buffering live TV was worse than saying, you know, oh, the Man from U.N.C.L.E. movie was on, we streamed it. It buffers enough and it can keep up with the whole show. So that was my theory, but why live TV was actually a little bit weirder than streaming like a movie or streaming just a TV show straight up. So anyway, lessons I have learned this week.
Let's go on to our next bit of feedback. We have an email from Mad Marv, another Patreon person. Thank you very much. He says, I read Ready Player 2 and I thought it was okay, but only okay. I won't give any spoilers, but this book didn't pull at the nostalgia heartstrings the way that the first book did. And there's something about the stakes of the conflict in the book that didn't feel as significant as the first. Probably too much telling and not enough showing. I remember picking up Ernie Cline's second book, Armada, that came out a few years ago. That one was really unremarkable. Ooh, ouch. Had to look up in Wikipedia summary to remember what it was about. Ouch.
Wow.
But I do remember it was in a similar vein as Ready Player One. As for the question of the week, what bug or patch to fix humans? I am so tempted to plug everyone into the Matrix that I can't. I can't quite think of anything else. I apologize. I forgot to put out the social question yesterday. Darn it. We don't have any feedback from our listeners or viewers on that question other than that one.
And, you know, I agree with Mad Marvel in the book. Pretty much what he said is how I felt. It's like I liked it all right, and I enjoyed it, but at the same time, it did not have the same heartstrings. Like you go, and he mentions this, and he mentions that.
Well, he does a lot of mentioning of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm not right through it yet. I think I'm up to 0008 or 0009, mm-hmm, where we're just getting into some of the conflict.
Yeah,
someone is on the loose, we'll just say.
Oh, yeah.
And the crisis is taking place. The crisis is forming.
Mm-hmm.
But it's... I'm enjoying it. I'm enjoying it, but I don't... It doesn't have that same novelty factor that Ready Player One did.
Right. Yeah, I think it feels like Ernie spent all his pop culture on the first one and... looking for more.
Yeah, we're getting deeper cuts on some of the songs now.
Yeah. Again, I liked it, but I agree with Kyle. I think he's pretty spot on with what he said. Yeah.
Okay. There are some things that I'm making notes as I go through in the event that we do get to talk to him again. So I've got some notes written down that I like, mm-hmm, some of the things that he's dealt with in terms of not directly to the story, but like cultural things that we're dealing with today and how they're dealt with, what is this, about 25 years in the future, in the mid, mm-hmm, 2045, 2046.
Yeah.
So it will be interesting. So the story picks up right where it left off, but then there's sort of an accelerated period where he says, okay, I've been at this for 3 years. I'm like, okay, we've jumped ahead a little bit.
Oh, yeah. I think the book takes place over a longer period than the first one did.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. There was a big, I'm trying to remember if there was a jump. I can't remember on the first one. I thought
he didn't solve the puzzle in 6 days, if that's what you're wondering, in the first one. I don't remember what the time span was. I thought it was a couple, 3 years, but I have to go back and check.
It was like when Gandalf was hanging out with
Balrog,
Bilbo, and then he leaves, and when he comes back, it was like, 7 years later? It's like, what? Well, in the movie, it made it look like he came back the next day after doing his research.
Anyway. All right. That wraps up our listener feedback. Thank you very much. There is a number on the bottom of the screen if you want to get in touch with us. 707-530-2428. Leave us a voicemail or send us an email, technorama@chuckchat.com, like Mad Marv did. So we had one of each this time. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us. We'll get to that information at the end of the show again. So let me turn that off. Clear the title. And I believe that means we march right in. Well, speaking of march, let's get the marching band. Woohoo! History time. It's on this day in history for January 13th, 2021. This is the 13th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 352 days remaining in 2021. It was on this date in 1888 that the National Geographic Society was founded in Washington, D.C.
And on January 13th, 1910, the first public radio broadcast took place. It was a live performance of operas, Cavalleria. it's not capitalized. I was trying to... Rusticana and Pagliacci.
This was not intentional, people, but it is funny.
Yeah, were sent out over the airwaves from the Metropolitan.
Wow.
Metropolitan. Yes, I'm sorry. I need a drink of water here. Opera House in New York.
Henry Ford. I can pronounce that one. Patented a plastic automobile, which was 30% lighter than a regular car, on this date in 1942.
It also wasn't as resilient, I don't think.
Well, back then, all they had for plastic was that brown Bakelite stuff, which was brittle. So every time a shopping cart bumped your door, it cracked and fell apart.
That's right. And on January 13th, 1968, Johnny Cash performed live at the Folsom State Prison.
I want to know if he actually played Folsom Prison Blues. if that song was inspired by his concert. I don't know. I would have to look at what the lineup was for that night. It was also on that date in 1978 that the United States Food and Drug Administration required all blood donations to be labeled as paid or volunteer donors. Interesting.
It was also 28 years ago today that the space shuttle Endeavour headed for space for the third time as STS-54 launched from the Kennedy Space Center.
Happy birthday goes out of this day to French astronomer and academic Félix Tisserand. Something like that. Born on this date in 1845.
And born January 13th, 1864, German physicist and academic, Nobel Prize laureate, Wilhelm Wien.
Wilhelm Wien.
Well, however you say it.
Alfred Fuller. Does that name sound familiar? He's the Canadian-American businessman who founded the Fuller Brush Company. He was born today in 1885.
Australian-American mathematician from Vienna Circle, Carl Minger, was born 119 years ago today.
And Robert Stack. Yes, that Robert Stack. The one... You have two choices. Choose wisely. He would have made a good emperor, I think. He's the actor. He was born 102 years ago today.
And also born in 1926, on January 13th. English soldier and author created... Paddington Bear, Michael Bond. No relation to James.
I had a Paddington Bear from my older sister. She had a book.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, I knew about Paddington Bear long before I went to Paddington Station. Charles Nelson Reilly. The American actor, comedian, director, and I like this part, game show panelist.
Oh, no.
And quote-unquote television personality was born 90 years ago today.
And also, in the same vein, Rip Taylor. Remember, he was very flamboyant.
Woo-hoo! Yeah.
American actor and comedian was born on that same date in 1935.
Two very flamboyant people.
They're both on, Hollywood Squares and stuff.
Indian commander, pilot, and astronaut Rakesh Sharma was born on this date in 1949.
And also turning 61 today is American physicist and chemist, Nobel Prize laureate, Eric Betzig.
And born the same day in 1961, American actress, comedian, and producer Julia Louis-Dreyfus. Yes, Elaine from Seinfeld is 60 today. Oh, man. Wow. Listener birthdays this week include... January 14th, Glenn Tolar. January 15th, Ralph Whitfield, a.k.a. Goofy Ralph.
Goofy.
And Fuffy Frog on the 17th, a.k.a. Christina.
Fuffy Frog? I'm sorry.
No, it's Fuffy Frog. I don't know. We're making up character voices now. We have no idea what a Fuffy Frog sounds like.
Not easy being
like.
Green, right?
Originally from Canada, but now from Thailand. Happy birthday to all of you. If you're not on the birthday calendar, you should get on the birthday calendar because I'm going to put a thing on the screen that tells you how to do that. There it is. Go to chuckchat.com/wiki, or if you like the new link, chuckchat.com/birthday, and we will give you a shout out at the appropriate time of year. That's the way it was on this day in history for January 13th, 2021. I don't think the band is done quite yet, so we're just going to walk them out the door.
This is the extended version.
We're going to do like on Animal House and just march them down the alleyway and leave them there.
Just open the door and they kind of just keep walking right through the door and down the hallway and out in the street.
Do you remember in Animal House? They kind of led the marching band down this alleyway and they all got stuck.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
All right, which means it's time for a random blue button over here.
Everyone,
well, that was a good one. There in the news article, wow, this one comes from theguardian.com. I lived like an astronaut for months in isolation.
We all have in the last year.
Yeah, pretty much. We're in our own space capsules. Yeah, next story. Once upon a time, I lived on Mars, or the closest thing to it. At the time, I was a science journalist and not necessarily an obvious choice for the mission. And yet I found myself on it. This was 2012, and Kim Binstead, a professor of information and computer sciences at the University of Hawaii, along with Gene Hunter, professor of biological and environmental engineering at Cornell, had put out a call for, quote, almost astronauts to participate in a four-month Mars mission. Well, I'm going to get tired of the Earth quote on this thing. Binstead and Hunter wanted a crew who could technically qualify for spaceflight, according to NASA, which isn't capitalized in here. Must be the NASA knockoff. In terms of education and experience, they were also looking for astronaut-like personalities who, according to Binstead, featured thick skin, a long fuse, and an optimistic outlook. Nearly 700 people applied worldwide. Somehow they chose me. And so between April and August of 2013, I lived with five other not really astronauts in isolation, all of us making various Martian concessions like mostly bathing with wet wipes, foregoing real-time social media, and zero access to fresh fruits and vegetables. We lived inside a large white geodesic dome off an access road at 8,000 feet on the Hawaiian volcano of Mauna Loa. The scene was very red, very rocky, very Mars. There was limited electricity and water. We could only leave the dome wearing bulky, cumbersome, spacesuit-like outerwear. While we had an emergency mobile phone, our sole regular contact with Earth was through email. And since Mars is extremely far away, our email transmissions were delayed by 20 minutes each way to mimic the actual communication lag to be experienced by Martian explorers. Wow, that would make a heck of a Zoom call, wouldn't it?
Hey, you know what makes it even worse is people didn't read their emails.
You send it. Yeah. Why would a 20-minute email delay matter on Mars?
Yeah.
So interesting story here.
Hey, I send emails and they're pretty immediate and people still don't read them.
That's right. I don't expect an immediate response on email. That's why I send them like Sunday at 7 a.m.
Right.
All right. Interesting story. If you want to go through and read the rest of this adventure, I encourage you. You can find that at chuckchat.com/technorama. Look for episode 625.
Hey, the worst thing about this is they came out of isolation only to go back in isolation. Because
well, they did this in 2013, mind you.
I know. I'm kidding.
Oh, it's another.
My nightmare's back.
And we don't have toilet paper. Oh, my gosh.
I just got out of therapy from the last time we were in isolation.
And I'm not getting paid for this isolation.
Yeah, that's right. So anyway, that brings us to, let's go back from Mars to Earth. And, you know, we're spinning a little faster, by the way.
See, the days are not getting shorter.
No. And Superman has nothing to do with this. He's not making the Earth spin faster.
He made it go backwards.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh, he made it go backwards. Actually, there was a version of this article I found, and they did use the picture, the Superman, like from the movie. You could see the rings around Earth like he was going. They used that as the thumbnail for that.
Nice.
Anyway, what if that feeling that time flies was actually true? Indeed, the Earth has been spinning abnormally quickly lately, reports the Telegraph. The planet is now completing its rotation in 1.4602 milliseconds, less than its usual 86,400 seconds. Oh, so I got to calculate my days different now.
Oh, man.
Go back in all that code you wrote.
I know. It's terrible. It's yeah. You know, 60 times 60 times 24 is 86,400. Everybody knows that if you've ever done any time calculations. That's now right. We have to say minus
1.4602.
But that's milliseconds. So you got to take.
That's true.
Oh, man.
Anyway, so the speed of the Earth's rotation varies constantly because of complex motion of its molten core, oceans, and atmosphere, as well as the effects of the celestial bodies such as the moon. The friction of the tides and the change in the distance between the Earth and the moon all make for daily variations, of the speed of the planet rotates on its axis, the Telegraph reported, adding that even the snow building up on the mountains and melting in the summer can shift the rotation. Interesting. July 19th, 2020 was recorded as the shortest day since records began in the 1960s, after highly accurate atomic clocks were developed and compared the length of a standard day to the fixed stars in the sky. So again, wow, the Telegraph's getting a lot of credit in here. According to the Telegraph, the previous shortest day was in 2005 and was beaten 28 times in 2020 and 2021 already. And in 2021 is expected to be the fastest year ever, with the average day passing 0.5 milliseconds faster than usual.
All right.
If we can get last year passed a lot faster, because it sucked.
If we can get both these years to pass fast, then
right.
Well, I remember they said 2005 was a change because of the 2004's earthquake, the tsunami. The way that the plates shifted actually changed the way that the Earth it changed the length of the day.
Hmm. I was actually kind of surprised that they mentioned just snow, you know, would be enough of a factor to affect our rotation. But you would think something, I think ultimately it'd be, you would think the snow would be kind of light, but maybe not.
But there's no, it's part of the hydrological cycle. You're not changing the mass, you're just changing the distribution of it.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And also, you know, I guess there's something to be said about the snow and the bouncing off of the sun's, you know, rays doesn't make the, I don't know. I'm thinking
that's a thermal thing.
I don't know what's to say that doesn't affect anything either. I don't know.
I don't think so. It's the distribution of them, but they started out talking about the molten core, and you know, if there's more mass in one spot, it will change the way that the Earth rotates. Oh, and they also mentioned the moon. The moon is getting further away from us.
Mm-hmm. It is.
And that's going to change the way that the Earth behaves. Eventually, we'll lose the moon. Probably not in my lifetime, but
want that to happen, though.
We will lose the moon, and then things go really haywire, because the moon is helping keep us on our 23.5 degree axis. If we lose the moon, the Earth starts to wobble. The precession gets really kind of crazy, and then the weather goes insane. So good luck with that.
Well, I'm going to start a GoFundMe to help repair the moon.
No, just build a new moon.
Yeah. That's no moon.
A space project that captures a new moon.
Do what?
GoFundMe that captures a new moon.
Yeah,
you got these asteroids. Yeah, the asteroids that are coming close by. It's like, oh, this one almost hit the Earth. Catch it.
That's right. Now, speaking of which, that leads us into our next article.
Yes, there's evidence of water movement found on meteorites that only recently fell to Earth. A team of researchers affiliated with institutions in Australia, the U.S., and France have found evidence of relatively recent water movements in meteorites that only recently collided with the Earth. In the paper published in the Journal of Science, the group describes their study of carbonaceous chondrite meteorites, or CC meteorites, that landed on the surface of the Earth within the past century, and what they found. What did they find? I'm going to make the font a little larger. Oh, my.
Carbonaceous. It sounds... titillating.
It sounds like it has bacon. It has bacon on it. It's got bacon. Is that like shrimp carbonara? A lot of scientists believe that the water present on the Earth came from meteorites. The theory has been difficult to prove because the meteorites recovered to date do not contain water, and because chemical reactions that might have involved comet-borne water occurred millions of years ago. In this new effort, the researchers took a look at the idea from another angle. They studied isotopes in meteorites that have landed on Earth over the past century. Prior research has suggested that most, if not all, CC meteorites were formed approximately 4.5 billion years ago as part of the larger asteroid. To find out if recent arrivals might have evidence of water history, the researchers looked at uranium and thorium distribution in samples. The former is water-soluble, while the latter is not. Logic suggests that if water ever existed in the meteorite, it would have to move as it melted, and that movement would be reflected in the distribution of thorium and uranium isotopes. Although both isotopes have short half-lives, which means if their distributions in meteorites could be found, they would have occurred relatively recently, on the order of a few million years. That's pretty recent in geologic terms, but a lot longer than mine. In studying 9 of the meteorites, the researchers found the distributions they were looking for, a finding that suggested water had been moving due to melting, likely within the past 1 million years. The researchers suggested that not only could such meteorites have delivered water to Earth during the planet's formative years, they could have also been doing so in much more recent past. They note that this idea could be tested by sampling asteroids before they strike Earth, such as what was done recently by Japanese and American spacecraft. Ha-ha! So there we are, another step closer to the theory that water came from meteorites.
I think a lot of meteorites would have to hit the Earth, though, to bring enough water to...
There's a lot of meteorites out there, though, Craig.
Yeah, I know. I mean, who knows?
More back then.
No, yeah, and I'm just thinking, I guess the time when there was debris everywhere, there probably was a lot of meteorites sitting together to build Earth, so...
Think of all the water that's on Europa and Enceladus and all the other places. That had to come from somewhere, too.
That's true.
So there's a lot of water out there to be had. It's a grab. Everybody was trying to grab all that water in the early universe.
Hey, you've been watching The Expanse way too much.
No, actually, I haven't seen anything past season 2. I really need to get back to that show.
Oh, and then what they were doing? They were mining ice or water.
I forgot what they were mining. It was more of a political show to me than.
Well, they were doing water. Yeah, they were mining the water in the Kuiper Belt.
One thing's for certain, I'm not making any more comments like I did last Monday.
What'd you do last Monday?
I was talking to a couple of my friends and I said, hey, 2021 just called 2020 and said, hold my beer and watch this. And look what happened on Wednesday. No, I'm not doing that anymore.
It's your fault. You did it.
I just heard 2021 making a call. All right, let's give a shout out to the chat room. We've got a number of people that are on Facebook. I see Dhruv Gupta, who's been hanging out with us on YouTube. And if we look over on Facebook, we got Amy Bowen, John Miller Jr., Clinton Alvord, Dan Coyer. We've got Steve Cody. Wow, we've got all our Patreon people hanging out with us. This is really cool. Do you see anybody that I missed?
John Miller, no. I think, that's pretty much it. Yep.
Thanks, everybody, for hanging out.
Did you see Amy? Did you say Amy Bowen?
I said, yeah, she was right at the top of the list.
Yes.
All right, we do the show for you live Sundays, 9:30 Eastern. Want to see you there, so put a mark on your calendar at whatever time zone that is for you. For me, it's 7:30 right now. When you all change your clocks again in a few weeks, it's going to be back to 6:30. So you're messing with my dinner now.
I don't want to change it. It's not my fault.
Regular schedule is fine. All right. Go to our Facebook page, look for Technorama Podcast, and you'll get notified when we start this stream up. I think we have a Remember When up next. Yes? Yes.
Yeah.
Let's do that. Okay.
Two, actually.
Two of them. We have first one. Did I read the last one? Your turn.
Okay. So, you know, recently we lost Chuck Yeager.
Yes.
Yes, I think at the end of the last year. Well, this caught my eye because every once in a while I pulled up Google, the Google goggles and looked up things. Well, this is really cool because you can use Google goggles to look at Chuck Yeager's cockpit.
Of the X1. I mean,
it is everything. What's that?
It's the X1 cockpit.
It is the X1 cockpit, and it's beautiful. And it looks very uncomfortable.
there's not seat cushions.
There's nothing on that seat.
Exposed wire harnesses all over the place. This isn't.
There's a little pillow in the bottom that he's sitting on, but it is held on by 4 bolts.
He signed it.
He did.
There's a signature in there. This is cool. I'm watching this rotate around.
Here you go. On the morning of October 14th, 1947, U.S. Air Force Captain Charles E. Chuck Yeager made humankind's first supersonic flight in the bullet-shaped Bell X-1 aircraft he nicknamed Glorious Glennis, and after his wife. The aircraft now hangs in the Boeing Milestones Flight Hall in the National Air and Space Museum, and I did see that while I was there. The 360-degree VR view is a part of a series of aircraft cockpits photographed for the museum by Dennis Biela, or whatever. Lightspeed Media. And you can just drag around things you want to note. The H-shaped yoke determined both roll and pitch. Airspeed was controlled by the number of rocket chambers, up to four, fired by the silver thumb switch on the left of the yoke. There was no throttle. It was on or off, pretty much.
Yep.
The Mach indicator goes to Mach 1.5. It was likely installed after Jaeger's first transonic flight. It's flanked by a conventional altimeter and airspeed indicator. The fastest Glorious Glennis flew was Mach 1.45.
Wow, I didn't realize he got that high.
Yeah, and the last bullet item here, Jaeger signed his name at the cockpit, as you mentioned. Glorious Glennis is the, on many occasions after, he signed his name in the cockpit on many occasions over the decades. Oh, so there's more than just one. He piloted 33 of the aircraft's 78 career flights, including its last in May 12th, 1950. Can you find all of his signatures? Well, you found one.
On the battery compartment, that's the one I saw. They're not really showing anything else here in this 360 pano.
Yeah, that's right. I see it right there, what you're talking about. It says, thanks,
love, or?
Hope, love, something like.
Yeah, can't really read what the first line says, but he did sign it, Chuck Jaeger, October.
Yeah, I didn't pull this up in the Google Glasses. I need to do that.
Okay.
But anyway, very cool to check it out. So I suggest you do the same.
Do you remember where he was buried?
No, I don't remember.
Oh, we have to find out and maybe we'll get there sometime. Because Charles Lindbergh is buried on Hawaii. We went there to his tomb or grave.
Oh, did you?
Yep. Let's see. And we got one other story, another one from The Guardian. Let's hope I can pull this together. Come on. Click, click, click. From the archive, will you emigrate to the moon? It's 1974, and the greatest science fiction writer, Isaac Asimov, attempts to present the facts on lunar life. Oh, we can do whaling on the moon because they discovered water up there. It's frozen. We're whalers on the moon. We carry a harpoon. We tell tall tales because there ain't no whales. Yeah, anyway, slipped into Futurama mode again. Right. The science fiction writer Isaac Asimov wrote about the colonization of the moon for his book, Our World in Space, extracted by the Observer magazine, Will You Emigrate to the Moon?
Wait a minute. You need to read that with the reverb.
All right.
Our world in space. Yeah, see, much better.
And they asked, will you emigrate to the moon? On the 9th.
You sound just like him.
9th of June, 1974. Welcome to the future. It's amazing how quickly the future dates. This feels more nostalgic than being credible scenario at the moment. He starts on somewhat shaky ground. Consider the analogous case of the arrival of Columbus on the American continent, he writes. Let's not. We're going to go enslave all the moon people.
Yeah.
Suffice it to say that at least there are no indigenous lunar peoples to exploit on the moon. As befits a writer of hard science fiction, Asimov is very good on the technical aspects of potential colonization, but less so on the psychological or social dimensions. There is no use pretending that the moon is a paradise, he admits somewhat redundantly. It possesses neither air nor water, and its period of rotation is so long that it's day and night each last 2 weeks. Yes, it doesn't sound like Bali, does it? not to mention those midday temperatures of 100 C and nighttime temperatures of minus 150 C.
Yeah, no kidding.
And a constant drizzle of tiny meteorites. Ah, thank you, atmosphere. When he writes, the thought of an algae diet won't strike Earthmen as particularly desirable, he would have been shocked to find millions happily drinking spirulina on Earth a few decades later. I'm not sure what spirulina is, but I'm going to guess it's algae-based. Mm-hmm. His optimism seems to know no bounds. What may begin as a tiny hole in the ground will develop into a more and more intricate system of caverns under the moon's surface and end by becoming an underground metropolis. Or maybe just a bigger hole. But wait, he notes, that within 5,000 years, at our present rate of increase, the total mass of human flesh and blood will equal the mass of the known universe. Do what now? And in preparation for life on other planets, we must place our hopes nowhere but in ourselves. In other words, we're doomed.
I think screwed is the operative word there.
It's fun looking back and seeing what people thought. That was from 74, 73. I would expect something more like that from the 1940s, but you know, before we actually went to the moon.
Yeah.
Okay. Right. Let's move on. Reverb the phrase, don't you believe it.
That's what he sounded like the Guardian on Star Trek there for a minute.
A question. Since before your sun burned hot in the sky, I have awaited a question.
Okay, that's just too much fun. Now we're abusing it. All right, let's...
Your sun burned hot in the sky. Oh, boy. Okay.
Okay, I think it's time for this orange button. Yeah, that one. It was just delayed. There it is. We have something more important. We have our patrons.
Okay, enough with the reverb.
This show is brought to you, our wonderful patrons. Thank you very much for all your funding. It keeps this show going when we have repairs, when we have software upgrades, when you have bandwidth to pay for. You are the people that make this show possible. It's really cool, and we really, really appreciate it. Thank you, Alexis Duran, Amber Elstad. Let's say these names properly. These are kind, generous people.
You're always screwing these up.
Amy Bowen, Avner Braverman, Ben Vaughn, Brian Brown, Chris MC, Dandy Mancoyer, that one, the one who called in earlier. Danny Mortensen, all the way from Down Under, Dean Jensen, Denise Inglis, Gary Lindros, Harold McKinstry, John Clifford, and John Noble. Thank you, Jorge Schrauen. We have people all over the globe. This is incredible that they're listening.
We are international.
We're an international podcast. I'm going to put that on a business card somewhere. Let's continue thanking you.
All other podcasts stay within their borders, but not us.
We have no borders.
Podcasters without borders.
Thank you, Christina, Thailand. Kyle Nishioka, Hawaii. Leon, don't know. Mark Kilfoyle, Canada. Mike Wills, Saturday Morning Media, California. Stephen Weshi, was he from Ireland? Scotland? No, I think we're just now mixing it up with Welchi. Okay. Steve Therian.
Uruguay. Spiffy, there you go. We just make it up.
Steve Cody and Sweet Steve London. Not from London.
Yeah, right.
He's from Sweden. Yeah. Thank you, everybody, and wherever you come from. If you would like to be part of this fun, let me bring up that piece of it. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. For as little as $1 a show, you get special content, and we'll figure out where you live, and we'll tell you on the show. Maybe we just gave away some PII. I don't know if that was a smart thing to do or not, but we're going to have fun with it. Please.
We'll edit it in post.
There is no editing in post on this show.
Right.
That must be where we added all the reverb.
Right. Yeah. You blew the budget on reverb tonight.
Thank you very much, everybody who makes this possible. We greatly, greatly appreciate it and hope to hear from you again. Patreon.com/Technorama Podcast. Not sure what I was trying to say there for a minute, but let's tell the rock and rock band they're done. So issue them down the side alleyway. And, oh, we've got a remote to pass. They want to know what the Venus to Earth dollar conversion rate is if we go interplanetary. Oh, those Venusians. They
the Mars bucks.
They don't have the concept of money yet.
That's right. So I watched something this last week.
I watched the first episode of this.
Did you?
Yep. Go ahead.
It's the History of Swear Words. Nicolas Cage is the host. It's on Netflix. And I actually kind of binged them all. They were only like, each episode was like 20 minutes or so.
Yeah, they're real short.
So after I started getting into it, I was like, I found myself almost done. And I was like, I'm all in. I'm finishing it.
See, that these 20-minute shows are the kind that I like to stick in when I go, I just need something before dinner. I don't want to sit down and watch a whole show, but I need something quick just to cross it off my list.
Yeah, I thought this actually did pretty good. There's a few times when, aside from just the swear words, there was a few times that Nicolas Cage, you know, had poked fun at himself, like a couple of self-referencing jokes, which was kind of neat.
He says, "Yeah, if we take this random actor's statistics of where the swear words and the money comes in, it's like, and it says, there's a little placard off to his side that says, Nicolas Cage, actor, with this pie chart."
Yeah. And there was one, I forget what episode, what one of them, it mentioned, it showed a picture of one of his movies and he said, "That's a great flick," or something like that. Something like that. But anyway, it wouldn't say it was incredibly informative, but I thought it was fun. And they did shine some light on some of the history. And they did try to do that. So I thought it was a lot of fun. And was it 6 episodes?
Something like that,
Learned a few things about some of the origins of the words.
They do have some actual authors and you know, subject matter experts on this. But again, it's light on the history, the documentation side, and more for a comedic relief. But kind of like this show, it's a mix of, if you learn something, it's not our fault.
I forget her name, but the one lady was on there. She says, and I actually know this because I put it in the dictionary. She had worked at Webster.
She worked at Merriam-Webster, and her department was the dirty words.
Yeah, that's right. So it was a lot of fun. And like you said, history was, there was some history about the words, but it wasn't incredibly deep, but it was just fun. The comedians would make fun of it. It was almost like not pop-up video, but one of those shows where they say, "Oh yeah," and they talk about, you know, everybody has their own little take on the word or whatever. So yeah, go check it out. If you're not easily offended by the words, go for it.
There you go. I agree. After watching the first one, I'll be watching the rest. So it's not one of those, I give up.
Yeah, it's an easy investment, to be honest with you. So but yeah, Nicolas Cage. He was trying to be serious, but he's also, you know, It's you know, making fun of himself a little bit as it goes.
Bearded Nicolas Cage looks a lot like Aaron Rodgers to me, but I'll let you make the decision. Let's on to the Geek Library.
And reverb.
I should have done pan on that one too, but I don't know if you get stereo on the web. It might not work.
Oh, yeah. Maybe not.
Go right to left. All right. We have a story from sci-fi or swifi.com.
Swifi. That's right.
That David Hasselhoff's personal kit Firebird is for sale, which he'll personally deliver if the price is right. When the world seems at its darkest, there's no better time to remember it also features extreme cases of light. And as any German pop fan will tell you, the Hof is the light that shines after a long, dark night. Spelled with a K.
That's right.
Yesterday, we learned that the Hof, a.k.a. David Hasselhoff, is parting ways with the Hoff prop from the first SpongeBob SquarePants movie. But if you thought dropping $100,000 on a giant and frightening likeness of the Hoff seemed like a sweet deal, perhaps you've got the means to step into the big leagues of Hoff auctioning by bidding on his own personal kit. Care of Live Auctioneers. So this is the car from the SpongeBob movie, not from the TV series. Interesting. For those of us who grew up watching the Hoff sleigh as Michael Knight in the oh-so 80s NBC series Knight Rider, we don't need to explain what or who Kit is. But for you newbies who seek enlightenment, Kit, or Knight Industries 2000, is the name of Michael Knight's futuristically modded 1982 Pontiac Firebird Trans Am. We shall not speak of the Shelby Mustang Imposter in the not nearly 80s enough 2008 reboot attempt.
Right.
Complete with sentient AI, indestructibility, and handy turbo boost that literally shot him into the air. In short, it was the car that pretty much every Gen Xer with the keen sense of automotive refinery desired. And now these Gen Xers who actually amassed some money since the neon decade can own it, thanks to the Hoff auction from Live Auctioneers, which is currently underway. While there are a slew of Hofftastic items up for grabs, lot 0010, David's personal kit Knight Rider car, is obviously peak Hoffness. A, quote, fully functional kit car with a full conversion car located in UK. Of course, the lot winner will be responsible for all delivery expenses. And we're assuming, quote, fully functional means it can drive. Not that it's sentient.
Although that would be a plus, right? Or would it? I don't know.
Yikes. But judging from the auction picks, which look just like the fully computerized kit, we remember you may get some pretty cool flashing lights that ostensibly do nothing.
That's right.
Regardless, Live Auctioneer notes that if the hammer price exceeds 25% above reserve price, the Hoff will personally deliver the car to the new owner. The estimate is set for $175,000 to $300,000, and the current top bid is way over that at $975,000. Though Car and Driver notes, it may actually only be about half that. So it seems some lucky rich person is going to have the pleasure of not just driving one of the coolest cars ever to grace television screen, but also have it delivered by one of entertainment's most brightly shining lights.
Well, I think that would be, aside from the price, it'd be a lot of fun to have him deliver the car to you, you know, that you just bought. But that's a little pricey. I think you can build your own kit for cheaper.
I'll pay him a heck of a lot of money to come by and do a test drive.
Yeah. Well, John Miller Jr. said you should buy it so you can drive it in the Arizona desert. Just... you know,
That could work. All right. Come on, Patreon people.
Yeah. All right. Here we go. Second GoFundMe for today. Actually, when I went and looked at the bids, it looks like it's at, I'm not sure how much it's at. It says your maximum bid, $525,000. I don't understand the website because it doesn't make sense.
If you can't read that many zeros, you can't afford it.
Right. Well, there is, and if you look at the pictures in the dash, the side where the glove box and stuff is at, he's actually signed the dash.
Oh, that spoiled it.
Hey.
He took it out of the package.
You take it to the car wash and they clean it up and they wipe off the dash.
Good detailing. Nice job.
Who wrote on this dash?
Nice job, you know. Yucca putts. All righty, that takes us to the end of the show. We've got a question of the week for you before we go. What movie / TV / book, after finishing it, made you go, what the hell was that?
Oh, there's too many. There's too many.
All right, well, I'll have to go back and look at my bookshelf. If I have a book like that, it's probably not on my bookshelf anymore. So... I've probably got a couple of those in audiobook format too. Oh, it includes movies and TVs too. So,
well, plenty. I started to put all media, but I thought,
yeah, okay.
That sounded better if I put movie, TV, or
movie,
book.
Movie, TVs, or books. I'm sure there are lots of movies.
If it was a radio play or maybe a Broadway play that you, that may, fine, bring it in, but it doesn't matter.
If it's a TV show, then I usually don't watch more than the second or third episode. But movie, yeah, I've been sorry to make it through a few of those.
Yeah.
John Miller Jr. says, for that price, it better come with 10 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms, 2 indoor pools, 2 kitchens, and David Hasselhoff becomes my new driver, butler, and landscaper.
Kit is bigger on the inside.
That could happen.
Yeah, like the TARDIS.
I'll put one of those in the studio, and then I could put the studio in the TARDIS. Ooh, that would be very confusing.
Yeah.
Okay, there's your question of the week. We do have a Patreon show to record right after this, but you'll actually get it before this. So thank you again to our Patreon people. Let's get to the end of the show stuff. Yeah, that means it's time to get out of here. If you want to get in touch with us, go over to chuckchat.com/technorama. That's where you can find all our contact information. Get in touch with us on the listener line like Dan D-Man did at 707-530-2428. Somewhere I have that on the screen. Contact us. There we go. Technorama at chuckchat.com like Mad Marv did. We love hearing from you. Let us know what's up. Let us know what your plans for 2021 are. If we've made a mistake on the show, that's a good excuse to call us too.
We never make a mistake. No one never get a voicemail.
Hey, after 625 shows, we got this down.
They won't call us because we never make a mistake.
Thank you to everybody who joined us live on Facebook. Go to Technorama Podcast on Facebook. And you'll find us there Sunday nights at 9:30 Eastern time and on YouTube as well, like Dhruv did. I didn't see any other comments come in, but somebody's been popping in and out of there. Till next time, give us a binary high five, Craig.
All right, 101.
Thanks. Bye, everybody.